This is Tabletop Babble, and I'm Amber. Hello! Today on the show, I chatted with graphic novelist Brian McLaughlin. We sat down on June the 16th and chatted about professional cartooning, how he got his work published, the creative process, and coming up with and creating Complete the Quest, an interactive role-playing adventure that reads like a graphic novel, but also plays like a game. Hello, Brian, and welcome to Tabletop Babble. For my listeners, would you please introduce yourself, who you are, your pronouns, and what you do in the space?
Hi, my name is Brian McLaughlin, and I am he, him, and I am a cartoonist, and I make RPG-like game books that are also comics, and I host a live stream where we play Dungeons & Dragons and draw what happens along the way. And it's called Magical Marker, and it's a bunch of us artists just doing a PG-13 game of teens and tweens that are their first adventure away from their mentor. So those are the things I do in sort of the TTRPG space.
Oh man, I'm so excited for a couple reasons. One, I love when I get an artist on the show because I have a graphic design / cartoon-y kind of background. And also, I know that there is TTRPG content out there for kids and teens, but I haven't really seen a lot of it, and that could just be me not seeing stuff. So I'm excited to hear that it's a PG-13 Magical Markers. I'll have to go look at that later. So most of the time when I get people on the show that I haven't really met before, I'm kind of interested in, like, how did you get started in playing RPGs? What's your history there?
I'm going to go back to the early, you know, grade one or so, discovering Choose Your Own Adventure books. And those leading into Fighting Fantasy books, and then that leading into finally having a friend who knew how to play D&D. Because my parents got me the red box, me and my brother, and we couldn't make heads or tails of it when we were like 3 and 4. So, you know, I like the action figures in the cartoon series. I'm old enough that those were, you know, on when I was a child. But I didn't really get into it until middle school. And I played first edition, second edition, third edition, 3.5. I got out of it. Like, I wasn't really playing much when fourth came out. And then I got back into it for fifth through listening to live streams, sort of helping me ease back into the changes and the rules, things that had come up in fourth and had been kept for fifth.
It's so funny that you bring up Choose Your Own Adventure, because my mind forgot the existence of those books until you said them, but I love those as a kid as well. For a listener who may not know what a Choose Your Own Adventure book, which I'm sure somebody probably does, would you mind explaining that? And is there one that sticks out in your mind as like one that you was like your favorite or a good memory of?
Sure. Choose Your Own Adventure books and their spin-off things called Which Way, and they spawned a lot of imitators. And basically, it's a book that has multiple paths. So it would say, you're, you know, going up to a haunted house. Do you want to sneak in the back or do you want to go in the front door? And then you turn to a certain page depending on that. And then that option says, now you've gone in the back door and you see a scary cat. Are you going to try and scare it away or are you going to run away? You know, turn to this page, that page. And eventually, basically, a lot of the time, you were playing a child who died really quickly.
Yes. Yep, I remember that.
So it was kind of morbid, but there were also, like, you know, good endings to get to where, you know, you find your friend that had run into the haunted house and they're safe, or, you know, you find the gems that are hidden in the basement. Like, there were different ways to solve it in a positive way, and different, obviously different ways to die. And as for one that's really stuck with me, it's probably a Which Way book that was something about a strange land. I can't remember what the entire title is, but it was a fantasy one, like a Greek mythology. And there was a Medusa inside. And I was young enough that I was afraid to look at the picture because I thought it would turn me to stone.
I was so fascinated with those books as a kid because it was like, I don't know, I think of another picture book that I liked that was kind of like self-aware or was like talking to you or like giving you options. And I think it was, there's this golden book maybe that's like Grover, there's a monster at the end of this book.
Yeah, the monster at the end of this book.
And it's one of those like books as a kid, having that book talk to you, or as like a younger adult, having a book that was like letting you choose kind of like the path was like mind-blowing to me at the time. And it's kind of funny how that also for me probably helped bridge the gap into, playing TTRPGs and stuff. So your history with TTRPGs, Choose Your Own Adventure, and then getting through all the D&Ds, when for you was your art coming out? When did that happen for you?
Well, I've been doing, my mother was a primary school teacher, and when I was very young, she made a little book of the Mr. Men, and it was like, yeah, Mr. Men go camping. And I was like, wow, you can make your own book. And from then on, I was just making my own books, and I made my own choose your own adventure, your own fighting fantasy books throughout school. And I enjoyed doing that, and I started getting into just mostly doing the art stuff. And I went to college for illustration, but all of the people who were there in college were showing me comic books, and I had read comics when I was younger, and there were a lot of superhero stuff, and it was very, I can tell the difference between the artists now, but the styles weren't hugely different. But what was happening by the time I was in college with, Hellboy and Sandman and things like that was looking. Like, it was inspiring to see, because I was not somebody who wanted to be doing really careful brush strokes and thinking about the type of paper I was using. I was like, how can I tell a story with a drawing? And comics just seemed like a natural link. And I was lucky enough to actually do some comics for Dragon Magazine, which was Wizards Magazine back in the day. So I did some stuff in their Dragon Mirth section and, had a little bit of dip my toe in that, but then moved into more kids' comics, working for a kids' magazine called Owl, which is kind of a cross between Highlights and Nickelodeon. As wholesome as Highlights, but as fun as Nickelodeon. And it's available in America, but not as many Americans grew up with it as because it's based out of Canada. But they have plenty of content that, goes across. So if you have young listeners or people who have little kids and they're looking for a magazine to order them, Owl's a lot of fun. Yeah, then I started doing a book on making comics. I did a picture book, and this book that I've done now is, sort of the idea that I wanted to combine all the things I like doing. So I do puzzles for Owl as well as doing cartoons for them. So it's like I get to do puzzles, I get to work for kids, although a lot of adults I know like the book as well. And I get to do comics and I get to do fantasy. And so it's like all of my things that are my jam coming together in one book. So it's my favorite thing I've done so far. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I have so I'm so excited. Like I always wish that listeners could see my face when interviewers are talking to me about the stuff they do, because there's lots of things in that you just said I want to ask, but I don't want to derail the conversation. But okay, first question from that, because I need to know, with the Dragon Magazine, what was it like back then? Like, how would you get into something like Dragon Magazine? Did you submit? Was like a call to action? How did that happen?
I have a hard time remembering exactly how it went, but yeah, I just submitted because that was what we were encouraged to do through college, was look at a masthead, look for who's there and send them something. And especially, look for ones that connect with you. So, I wasn't thinking I could illustrate really well for Guns and Ammo or Home and Garden, but maybe Dragon. I did an illustration for Young Miss YM magazine. Like, I was looking for things that were more like kid friendly and more fantasy and things like that.
Sure. So then when you were going into, Owl now, was it the similar kind of process, or did you already have a rapport, or like how did that happen for you?
I had been published by Owl when I was just, like 7 or 8 in an art contest. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to drop off a little package for them of like, hey, this is a kid who was published when he was young and now has come back. And as an adult has done an illustration for us or something, right? Like, so I did some sample illustrations and I dropped that off at their offices and I never heard anything back. But then I became friends with some people in the Toronto comic scene, and there was one guy who was also doing silly kid stuff, and we became friends, and he worked for their companion magazine called Chickadee. And they said they need a new writer on the Owl book. You won't be able to do the art, you'll just be doing the writing. Are you interested? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So it's, who you know, it's networking, it's getting to know people who do stuff like you do. And that's how I got my foot in the door to try out for the job. And I've been with them ever since. It's been a couple of decades, or almost a couple of decades, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is actually a great transition because Complete the Quest is the book that you have. This is a week in June, so listeners, it's been out for about a month now. So first off, let's talk about what Complete the Quest is.
Complete the Quest is a graphic novel game book. It is an interactive story that's sort of like those old choose your own adventures, but because it's laid out graphically, I think it's, pun intended, it's a game changer. Because when I was playing the choose your own adventure books, I would put my fingers in between all the different paths. And this one, it's all laid out for you. There's no anxiety about which way you're going to go. You get to read, go, which way sounds better. Because they'd ask you to make a decision like, do you go left or right? And I'd be like, well, what's the context for this? Is there a smell? Is there a sound? How do I know? And there was no more information. And I found that frustrating. So that's something I tried to, it changes it by having it laid out visually. And that's also what makes it different too, is that those ones you died really quickly. And went back and made those choices. But here I'm saying, let's tell a story together, sort of like a TTRPG. You tell me how you get past these things, past these obstacles. I encourage you to look at what the characters that start the game, you pick three of six different characters, and they have certain skills that will get past certain obstacles, but you also can just make it all up. I tell the people at the beginning, like, it's not cheating to say, oh, I have a better way past this. Instead of punching my way past, I'm going to talk my way past. Instead of talking my way past, I'm going to punch my way past. Like, whatever you think makes a better story, go for it. And, there's always a correct way to get through the book if you are looking for that correct path and you're that type of player. It's not going to leave you hanging, but it's, encouraging those baby steps towards being able to play an RPG at the table with other people by saying, do you have a better idea to get past this? And basically the plot line is that there's a Queen Evergreen has been poisoned by a mysterious book that has shown up. And you're supposed to find the ingredients to save her. And there's a few different places you can go to find them. And the different paths are all interesting. And some of them are better suited to certain characters, but they'll all be, that basically encourages you to reread it and has multiple, you can go through it multiple times with different characters through different paths and see how it changes. Yeah, it's kind of like having a module that is laid out visually. It's like a solo module for you. And that's basically how it was created in my mind too, as I was reading some of the hardbacks and I thought, oh, I'd love to do this with this adventure and I'd love to do that. I'm going to be dungeon mastering it, so I will never be able to do this, but this is how I would get past that. Wouldn't it be fun to have a book that's like this? But if I made it, obviously it's going to be a cartoon book. It's not going to be just straight text. And then how would that change it? And I did a bunch of sample pages and I'm like, oh, this is actually really fun. I showed it to some friends and they dug it and I just kept going with it.
Because I had a chance, you sent me a copy beforehand to take a look at, and one, I think it's beautiful visually. I love the illustrations and everything. And as I was going through it, it felt like I couldn't put my finger on it because I didn't remember what they were. But it was like a choose your own adventure book, and then also a module. And I really liked, yeah, I really liked how it was laid out. I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing and go through it all. But I definitely was getting that vibe of choose your own adventure, and I'm excited. So like, yeah, you said there's like six characters. So first off, like the main demographic you say would be, what was your age range that you were going for with this?
Middle grade, so sort of like, 8 and up. When I started writing this book, I had kids younger than that. So I was playtesting it with them where it was the original idea was a picture book that you would read with your kids and you would go through it as the narrator. You're helping them guide them. So I think it still works that way. You can bring it to younger kids and the adults who have, playtested it with their kids that are into RPGs, the adults are like, yeah, this is great. I'm going to keep reading this myself. So it sort of hits on all of them, but as far as what's the content, it's definitely for younger people. Like there's no violent death and gore and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna read out one of the characters that I would want to be because I love this character, which is Blade the Flowerkin Sneak, whose powers are she can sneak, spot traps, pick locks, pick pockets, and pick her nose, which immediately appeals to me as I have a childlike mind. She can shoot arrows at enemies who are far away or sneak up to dagger them from behind. I like dagger them instead of like, cut them or, coup de grace them or whatever. So yeah, I like the tone. It appeals to me as a 30-year-old, 30-plus-year-old woman, and it's one of those situations where I was like, yeah, I could see myself like with one of my nieces or nephews reading this through with them, even though they're younger, just because it'd be fun that like I was saying, that interactive part is so fun for me when I was a kid with the that Grover book. As far as like the content inside of it, thinking like in a module mindset, right? How many maps or encounters or like how many paths are there in this book? Can you quantify it?
I'd say that there's two big main paths. One of the big main paths splits again. So you've got sort of one large, you've got two forks and one forks again. There's also a speed runway that you can find that's like only a few pages long. It's like maybe, you can finish it in two or three pages of maps, sort of a secret way. And then within those pages, there's multiple paths. So like if you take one of those tree branches, there's usually a top and a bottom on the page. And so you can go across the top into the Dwarven Mines, or you can go down the bottom through the Mushroom Kingdom. And it depends on who you have with you, which is going to be the best suited thing. Like if you took the dwarves, you're going to go through the Dwarven Mine, right? Like it just makes sense. And you're going to find things that reward you for doing that, like a Dwarven pickaxe or something, magical item that they can use. And I tried to put in something that thematically matches for each of the characters. Like there's a scene for each of them to get excited about. If you've brought in the character, you can find like, oh, there's a druid battle here. I'm glad I brought the druid.
I'm clicking through it right now because it obviously was a ton of work. So I guess that kind of segues into my next question, which is, how did this come to be, first and foremost? And then what is the timeline from that inception to now?
Publishing is a long game. It's a long process. So yeah, this was probably 2 years ago when I first had the idea, 2.5 years ago, and I started making up the sample pages and I showed them to my agent and she said, yeah, I think this has some potential. It's nothing like I've ever seen before, and I don't play Dungeons and Dragons, so I don't quite get it exactly, but my assistant encourages me to go with it because she does, and she says this is great. And she started to get into it. Like my agent understood what was going on and dug it. And then we pitched it around, and a lot of people were like, one person said, I don't get all this LARPing stuff. And so there's a definitely a disconnect with some of the, publishing houses that didn't understand it, but there were a couple of that really did. And I went with one where the editor had said, this is, really cool, but I want to see this. I want to see more paths. I want to see this being longer, and I want to see more comic pages, less map pages. Well, like percentage-wise, like I want there to be way more story, like those cut scenes that make the raise the stakes, that help you understand why you're doing the quest. And I said, oh yeah, that sounds like the editor for me. And I went with John, and John Morgan did a fantastic job editing this. As a primarily an artist ahead of a writer, I think I couldn't write a script for this. I didn't want to have to say at the top half of the page, there's this, and it's this color, and it looks like that. And I thought that would never make any sense. So basically, I drew it out and I put the text on the page and submitted it digitally like that so they could see what was going on. And I thought, it takes some time to draw, but I'm a quick drawer and I'd rather take the time to draw it out than to type it out because I think I was more adept at actually getting to the point. And that was good for them to be able to give me feedback and say, yeah, this is working. This is unclear. I can't tell which path I'm supposed to be going on. Can you make this separate these paths a little better? Or, give me the feedback I needed to do. And once that was cleared up, we went to color, did some tests to see if the colors were printing right, and did some play testing to make sure that everybody. The tutorial took us a long time to do. That's one of the things we spent the most time on. Trying to figure out how much information and how little information to put in there. And I think we nail it. It's like 2 pages long, basically, for the tutorial. And the people that I've given it to who don't know D&D are like, I thought this was going to be really hard, but I get it. I understand what I'm doing. I can help my kid out.
The tutorial part, like actually writing out how somebody's supposed to use stuff, like my day job is literally writing instruction manuals for car seats and strollers and juvenile products. So I can totally understand the struggle there, making something that is instructional on for actually acting out this book.
Oh man. I really want to experience the magic of Dungeons and Dragons, but I'm a cave hermit who made an oath never to speak to other people again.
And I want to watch a classic fantasy series like Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones, but I can't stand the sight of human faces.
Well, I want to relive the magic of make-believe, the humor of a preschool-age child, and the genuine camaraderie of nearly 10 years of friendship through only my ears, but I don't know how.
You ignorant fools! You don't even know about Dames and Dragons!
What?
But Dames and Dragons? What's that?
Dames and Dragons is a Dungeons and Dragons actual play podcast!
A podcast? So I can experience the spontaneous group storytelling of D&D without breaking my oath of solitude?
That's right.
And I can take part in a rich fantasy storyline without ever having to lay eyes on a disgusting human face?
Never again will the faces plague you.
And it has a cast of four female friends who make constant immature jokes as they play?
Absolutely. I would never lead you astray, my friend. Whether you love D&D or just love a good fantasy tale, Dames and Dragons is the podcast for you. Tells the story of three unlikely heroes who are chosen to become guardians of the goddess of their world, a floating island by the name of Estra.
By God, that sounds like something I could get into.
Sounds like something I'd love.
Sounds like something I'd make.
Well, that's just ridiculous. Dames and Dragons, updated every second Monday, wherever podcasts are sold.
One of the questions I want to ask is, like, so if you don't mind me asking, how long have you been drawing for? You talked about your speed, so I'm interested in knowing how long you've been actually drawing.
I mean, I've been drawing for since I was a child. Like, I have a callus on my finger, and I had a wart on my other side. And I just, for the longest time when I was a little kid, just assumed that that wart was the callus for that hand. Like, I just thought you had bumps on your hands. And then I was like, why do I have a bump here? And my mom said, oh, that's because you draw so much and you push down so hard. And I was like, why do I have one on this hand? She's like, oh, we better go to the doctor. And had to get that frozen off. But yeah, I've always been doodling and drawing, but also writing. I always was making those books. That was a combination of the two. I think I stuck with it more than the other people I knew, like in through high school, like the artists I knew in high school were like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to try to do this as a career. And then in illustration in college, there were a lot of people who realized, yeah, maybe it's not really their jam. And I was seeing that I was not as good as the people around me as far as my rendering ability and my ability. I realized that I do not have an excellent memory for visuals. But what I do have is the ability to combine things in new and interesting ways and to use short forms and cartoons and more iconic graphics. Like if you see the chapter breaks between each of these has an iconic flag that is, you know, just a couple of things put together that could be like a desktop icon that would open, you know, a domain or something. And that was the process for me coming to grips with the fact that I am not an artist and not a writer. I'm a cartoonist. Realizing that I'm a jack of all trades or a jack of a few trades, like, because as a cartoonist, you then become the set designer and the actor and the director and all that other stuff. And that sort of, I'm good enough at all of those that I think that this is where my work shines. And I'm not surprised that, you know, people aren't saying, I really want you to do a painting over my fireplace, because that's not who I am. And I'm okay with that.
I feel that. I've talked with a couple of other designers who've come on the show about, I thought at one point in time I wanted to be a fine artist, but realized I don't have the patience or the, I don't want to say skill. It's just like, if I really, really wanted to, right? Like, you could build that skill up, but I don't have that draw for it. And yeah, it's like, if you are good at, you know, like I said, I am visually attracted to this comic. It's aesthetically pleasing. I think it's very fun and it's expressive. And I am excited to look at it more once I get some time and to try out going through a little adventure on my own. So more process stuff, because, you know, you said that you basically did storyboarding instead of writing a script. Is that kind of true? Is that storyboarding is what it would be called, kind of? Or was it more like you were actually drawing out the comic itself?
I basically drew out everything that was there, like what would have looked to other people like sort of rough inks or finished inks, where you have, like, I would loosely draw a layer underneath so that I knew where things were, and then I draw a black layer over top of it. And then I would color a character when they first appeared if they were important. So you, they would know, like, I don't have to say this is the person's, you know, race, or this is the person's, you know, what's going to set them apart. Because each of the characters, like the main characters, have a color. It's kind of a Voltron-like thing where there's, you know, a yellow sun cleric, and there's a green sneak thief, the one you talked about earlier. And so I wanted them to have like a color that identifies some of the other NPCs that actually can join you later on, so that you can be like, oh, I got a purple character, I got a pink character. And because I like that thematically, that those characters in those shows, they come together to form something bigger than themselves, that they're an archetype, and says that no man is an island. You can't win this on your own. You need three people to finish this book. A heroic effort is a group effort. And I think by giving each of them a significant color, that helps separate them from each other, and then feels more harmonious when they're together. And you can see, like, it's all the colors of the rainbow coming together. But to go back to the process a little more, I would, for the writing of that, I would come up with a few different locations I wanted to go to. So I'm like, okay, well, I want to go into, you know, a mine area underground. What would go with that? And I'm like, well, some caverns. Well, what would be in the caverns? Mushrooms. Okay, well, what are the different types of threats you might get from mushrooms? And I'd go and read about mushrooms. And I would go and read about mines, learn about, you know, the type dark damp or whatever that you would get in your lungs if you were down there. So I'm like, how can I turn that into something you can defeat? So I thought, oh, you could pull it into a bag, like a bagpipe or something. That would be kind of funny. So the first thing when you get into the mine areas, there's a guy who's playing the bagpipes, and he's just giving it up because he's like, you know, I don't get this. One flute is fine, but 10 in a bag is just ridiculous. And so if you have a dwarf with you who recognizes the clan that's on the pattern of the bag, he'll give you the bagpipes for free, and then you can use that when you go into the mine. So that was sort of the process where I'm working backwards from what looks cool and what, you know, is going to separate things, research some details about it to give me some real world information, and then doodle a bunch of cool creatures. One of the things that really excited me about those old fighting fantasy books is they had amazing monsters in it, some that still haunt my memories to this day, some for being adorable and some for being terrifying. And so I really wanted to, you know, you picked out the flower character at the beginning of the book, and I was like, I want to set this apart from other books because I've never seen flower characters as a main race. And I've never seen bug characters as a regular race. And so I have them pretty prominently in the book to try and give it some flavor. And that's part of the process too, is just going through and saying, what can I do to make this not Dungeons and Dragons? What can I do to make this not Lord of the Rings without, you know, stealing from another group? You know, like, I don't want to...
Yes.
Say, yeah. Like, oh yeah, I'm just going to go to Eastern mythology or something. Like, no, just try and make up something out of whole cloth. Like, what would the metaphor be here if I picked bugs, and how would it affect the world if people were trees and they need to interact with people who are not trees, and what would they call each other? And that was a fun process.
I am such an ADHD unfocused person. Like, I'm always just so impressed when I see somebody's completed work, you know. It feels to me like a mountain, and I'm always interested in how people come up, the behind the scenes of stuff. So was this all on you, or did you have, like, in the, like, your editor going back and forth, was he involved in that process a lot, like coming up with ideas of, like, that kind of stuff, or where were you getting your ideas and inspiration from?
The ideas really came from, a lot of it was doodling in the sketchbook. And I would pick a theme. I would say, like, okay, if it's going to be, maybe they're going to be in an area that's all stained glass. And there isn't in the book, that doesn't exist. But I did a page in my sketchbook where I've got, like, what would a stained glass monster look like? Or a shield that's made of stained glass, or a, you know, a creature that's a tower or whatever. Like, how can I take this theme and just explore it as much as I can? And if it takes me off, like, you know, I said a tower, like, well, towers would have stained glass windows in them, but they're not a stained glass. So it's like, if it's taking me somewhere else, just follow that and just doodle around. And like, I would do the process, because like, I'm a sort of a stay-at-home dad, where I drop the kids off at school and then I pick them up. So I've got the day to work, but then as soon as they're home, like, I'm cooking the meals and I'm looking after them, making sure they're doing their homework, that kind of stuff. So my time to doodle that was like me and my wife watching TV at night, and we would be watching something that isn't necessarily so visually, didn't have subtitles or something. I'd be sitting there doodling this out. And that was sort of my idea generation time. I do that with my comic writing too. When I need a joke or something, I come up with a theme that I want to write on. Like, maybe I'm going to do jokes this month about Mother's Day. So I write down everything I can think of to do with Mother's Day. And I have different categories that I write in. So there's like people, places, things, phrases. And I have to come up with like five things for each of these different categories. And then I come up with opposites. And there's like a whole process to the brainstorming that I use. And I can do that visually, just, you know, draw a shape out and see how many things look like that. That's how I came up with those icons for the flags. It's like, okay, could this shape be a wing? Yeah, okay, it looks okay. What if it was a flower? Okay, wing and a flower, they both look kind of connected. You know, a key, what could be the teeth on a key? Books, a castle, you know, all these things that I've got. And then I go and look what fits with the book. So I'm like, okay, there needs to be a secret library. That's, you know, it's called the Poisonous Library. So their flag or icon is going to be the key with the books on it for the teeth, because it's a secret library.
I do stuff similar when I'm like brainstorming. I like to watch stuff on TV, just have as a background noise, as long as it's something that I don't have to, like you said, read something. It's just like I can listen to. That's where I do most of my drawing too. Earlier in our chat, we talked about stuff that you did for OWL, and you said one of them was puzzles. Mm-hmm. Knowing that TTRPGs have a lot of puzzle stuff going on in like campaigns and modules and stuff, any sort of puzzling things that are happening in Complete the Quest, or is this all pure just story?
It is kind of puzzly in that it says, you know, how do you get past this? And then you've got to figure out like, oh, wait, I have this item. And it's sort of, because it's for younger kids, it hints pretty strongly what you might want to do. But there are things that are more puzzly. Like, you have to find certain things. Like, there's a page where it says, you can set this guy free if you've got the green key. You've got the green key, haven't you? And you look around the page and like it's hidden somewhere on that page, like a Where's Waldo game. So there are some things that are more like a game within the book. But like I have a PDF that's up on Itch and RPG Drive-Thru that's all about making puzzles and riddles and putting them in your game and how they work. It's called Mastering Puzzles, Riddles, and Mazes, I think. I can't remember the order. I think it's Riddles, Puzzles, and Mazes. Anyways, it takes a lot of the stuff that I learned about how to write jokes and applies it to how to write riddles, because a joke is a riddle often for kids. Like, you know, you say like, what is a something crossed with a something? It's a something. So it's the format of a joke is often a riddle, but a joke lands on the ha-ha side and the riddle lands on the aha side. And so I use the joke making process to figure out how to make riddles. And then I also like things like not having a fail state, so that, you know, here are six riddles or seven riddles, you know, a number that's like high enough that once you start solving one, you're in that rhythm and you can solve more. But, you know, there's seven statues and they're all going to attack you. But for every one that you solve, you don't have to fight that one. So it's like, doesn't stop you from going forward. It just makes it easier for you to go forward if you can solve them. And looking for ways that you can incorporate those types of things into your games. Because I found there wasn't a lot of support for riddles and puzzles, at least in Dungeons & Dragons. I don't know if there are in other RPGs, but I've been pretty disappointed with the level of puzzles and riddles in a lot of these books that I've read.
Yeah, I'm not a big riddle puzzle person. My brain has, going back to that ADHD stuff,
yeah.
My brain's like, no, I'm going to be the one back here waiting for everybody else to figure out. I'll pipe up if you guys say something, but that's not for me. So I haven't really looked for riddles, puzzles myself out in the world. So I don't know. I think there might have been an episode of actually this episode back when James Intercasso was a host where my business partner, Josh, I think he did an episode about riddles and designing puzzles and stuff for the thing where puzzles, he's same sentiment that you just said, where it's basically puzzles shouldn't stop you from going forward. They should just add flavor and some impediment and maybe some toughness, but it shouldn't just stop you outright. But okay, so now I'm interested knowing that you've got like puzzles, you got the map going on and complete the quest, and you mentioned that you did do play testing for this book slash game. At what stage of the process did you start play testing this idea with people?
Pretty early. I was play testing with my own kids and then a few of my best friends who are also parents, and they play tested with their kids, and I sort of got a response from that. And that was just basically, do they understand the concept? Do they enjoy the concept? And it was yes. And then it was at the end really where we were just playtesting the tutorial really. Is mainly what we wanted to do is like, can you use the tutorial to figure out the first chapter or first couple of chapters of the book? And the kids got it like across the board. There's, you know, they may have felt a little bit trepidatious or maybe they were over anxious. Like there was, you know, on either side, like, I want there to be more information. And somebody else was like, I want there to be a little less information. But we were sort of hitting that right zone. So we didn't have to do a whole ton of it. We were lucky. But John, as the editor, made a whole list of things. And it's like, okay, if this is your party of characters and you go through, if you get to here, you can't get past it. And I'd say, okay, well, I'd either point out that there was a way past it because it's something he had missed, or I say, oh, you're totally right. I've got to add something in there. Or say like, okay, they can go down the bottom path instead. And so it was most of that sort of playtesting stuff with John, was John going through and looking at how to, like with a chart and figuring it all out.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you basically had the concept playtest, then you the whole time had the editor, and then mostly what you had to do at the end was just making sure people knew how to use it. So in between there, because you had mentioned that there was stuff that didn't get put in, like the stained glass room. How much stuff didn't end up making it into this final version?
Enough that if they said they wanted a sequel, I would be, you know, in a good position, but not so much that it's already done.
Wow, that's a lot of content. I feel like the same way when I do GM prepping. I'm like, I've made a lot of this stuff. Well, they didn't touch it this time. Guess I'll use it for later. I guess my other question is, you know, working with an editor side by side and having somebody like dedicated to that, not having to really play test stuff out a lot, what was kind of some of the feedback outside of like, oh, I missed this? Was there anything else than just like missing and confusion, or was there other stuff that the John was giving you as you were developing this?
Give me a minute to think about that, because nothing's coming to mind. But
like, sorry to interrupt, maybe something to help would be like, was there anything that you had to radically change, or like a whole pathway that you had to do was different?
No, there was, the only radical change was from the original conception, which was it's going to be this many pages, which was like, you know, 40 to 80 or sort of like, I said, it's, I think the pitch was like 40 pages. And they said, but you know, we could maybe do another path and go up to 80. And he's like, I want to go to 120. Like over 120 pages. So it's like, okay, well, I've got to write a whole other, you know, that's one of the reasons that there's that whole other branch, is because I thought this is mostly sort of a contained story and I know where it's going. But if I make this other branch, it's self-contained and doesn't interfere with what I've already done. And I don't want it to be too long. Like if it was 120 pages in a row, then I think people would get bored.
Yeah, I'm trying to like, I think three, and like, I think 130, yeah, I would agree. I think you guys probably picked the sweet spot for amount of content as far as going through, especially like I think about just me with
how my brain works and thinking about kids who also have ADHD and stuff like that, I think this is probably a good amount. I did want to point out, and I saw the dedication to librarians at the very end, which is, I would like to touch on that, like why you dedicated this book to librarians.
Well, part of it was I picked a librarian as the villain. The main villain in the book is the guy who runs the poisonous library. And I picked that because I wanted to be ironic. Usually you think of a librarian as somebody who's good and positive because they're a storehouse of knowledge. There are people who can be a bad librarian who are, you know, not updating their catalogs and keeping, you know, backwards tomes around. So those people do exist, but I didn't want to cast aspersions on all librarians by having an evil librarian without saying librarians are great and they've been wonderful and supportive. Like, I've made friends with a bunch of librarians over the years. You know, back when I was in high school, we stole the announcement form from them. From one of the teachers, and we wrote our fake announcement, and the librarian came over and was like, "What are you doing?" And we said, "Well, we're making this thing." And it was like, "The following books are overdue from the library. The do's and don'ts of bird feeder repair." And like, you know, just a ridiculous list of books. And she's like, "Okay, this is great. Can I sign this? And we can put it in the office." I was like, yes, we can. I just want to add one thing. Just all books are due on this date. And, you know, we had made a new ally who was just like, "You can do your mischief as much as you want, as long as I get to remind kids when to bring their books back." And, you know, like, that was, I've had lots of good experiences with librarians like that. So,
Dave, keep this in here, because Dave, my editor, is a librarian.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we appreciate you, librarians. I've had lots of good librarian experiences growing up, and they are a unsung heroes.
Yeah, they're a place where people go to get out of the cold and use a computer, and they're dealing with, you know, frontline people and some people that can be difficult to deal with. But they're also, the next moment, are giving me an amazing recommendation for a book to read to my kids, or then taking it and actually reading to a group of school kids that came in. You know, like, they're doing so much and so many good different things that I think of them a lot when I hear about, you know, like, frontline workers.
Yes. So in doing my research for this interview, because I have to spy on my interviewees before a show, I saw on your website that you give talks and presentations. What is that about? I don't know, Dave, you could keep that in or not. I don't know, I'll cut it in later better, but whatever. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I do presentations for schools and stuff. I do school visits. And when I go to a comic book convention, I'm often also doing, you know, a talk, and kids will come to that. A lot of it's for teaching kids stuff. I did a book that's called Draw Out the Story, 10 Secrets to Creating Your Own Comics. And it is, again, for middle schoolers, because there's Scott McCloud's amazing book on understanding comics. And that, like, even as a college student, I found it quite dense and a little bit, you know, there's a lot of information in there for me to absorb. Certainly couldn't do it in one reading. And giving that to a child, I thought was too much. There wasn't a lot out for kids other than, like, you know, learn to draw manga, just copy this drawing. And so we made this book that was talking not about how to draw, but how to storytell. Like, why do you use a circular panel? Why do you draw the word balloon first, or do you do the words first? And all those sort of little lessons that are good for kids, no matter what style they draw in. And because of that, people were inviting me to, you know, talk about comics at their conventions or at their schools. And I've got a bunch of different presentations. I'm thinking about trying to put them together into little videos and throw them up online, but I got to get a better mic first, I think.
I think the internet would definitely benefit from something like, especially kids, to have some sort of a video or something I wish I had more stuff, because I remember going to my library and just getting, you know, here's how you draw horses, or here's how you draw, like, mermaids and stuff. And mostly what I did was just trace over top of the book.
Did you make picture. Horse mermaids, like seahorse?
I was doing some weird combo animals as a kid, because when you find out you can trace and, like, combine things and line stuff up, a whole world explodes in front of you. But yeah, I think that's awesome. I think I encourage you to do the video, good mic or not. I think it'd be great to have out there. I think this brings us to our end. If people wanted to find your work, Brian, and complete the quest, where could they do so?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at McLachlan Brian, so McLachlan Brian. And my website is brianmcl.com. And you can find Complete the Quest in most places that sell books. Like, you can find it, hopefully, if you have a local retailer, you can go to them. But if you can't, you can buy it on Amazon and help with the algorithm.
Oh, feed the algorithm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'm very happy to have found you and Complete the Quest. And I will definitely be sharing it with my friends who have kids. So thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Amber. I've really appreciated the time today. You've been fun to talk to.
Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. You can find me on Twitter at Rocket Orca, Kenny is at Volfmere, and John is at Crossways GM. Tabletop Babble is part of the Geekspective Network. Go to geekspective.com to check out all our other shows or follow us on Twitter at Geekspective. Our theme music was provided by the Battle Bards.